Hey, what's the latest on the gas leak before we get to the scoop?
There is a there are several trucks still parked in front of the house.
It's still going on.
It's still going on. I could get a knock at the door at any moment. The whole place could blow.
Okay, good to know.
All right, take it away, John.
All right, Mississippi State running back Kylan Hill is a dark horse Heisman candidate after a huge junior year in which he rushed for 1,350 yards, averaging 5.6 yards per carry and 10 touchdowns. He's from Columbus, Mississippi, was a star prep player for Columbus High. Hill says he will sit out or transfer if Mississippi doesn't change their state flag, which in the upper corner has a Confederate flag. If Hill transferred or sat out, it would be a huge blow to Mike Leach's first season at Mississippi State. Now, Mace, let's assume, and I know it's a big assumption, that we have college football this year.
Yes.
The problem is that politics take time. Hill may not have the answer about them changing the flag before the season starts. Would it be better for him to achieve his objective by playing, balling out, and doing interviews about it after, or sitting out in protest? What do you think?
I think his best play is to threaten to transfer, and if there is no movement on the political front, transfer. I mean, he's playing in a state that recognizes the racist heritage of the South. I would be uncomfortable with that. I think Mississippi is demonstrating that they are as backwards, more backwards than any state in the union. And by the way, there's no movement for it to actually change. They've got a Republican governor, Republican House and Senate, and they are not going to change that flag. So I do not blame this kid for transferring.
Okay, now when we talked about, to be fair, when we talked about the NBA players trying to raise awareness for social justice, you said you thought they should play and take advantage of that platform. Why is it different in this case?
Because I don't think you have necessarily much of a platform if you're a running back at the University of Mississippi, do you?
Well, he's at Mississippi State.
Mississippi State.
Yeah.
I don't think you've got that much of a platform as a player at Mississippi State.
You think he could make more hay by sitting out? He would get more attention that way?
Yes, I absolutely do.
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree. You know, Mississippi doesn't have any professional sports. It's not like the whole country is watching Mississippi State games. And he would become a very attractive person in the transfer portal.
To go
somewhere else. So he could still make a name for himself and really go down in history if he helped incite this change. So I'm with you on this.
All right, just days before the current NBA season came to a halt, Joakim Noah signed a 10-day contract with the Clippers. Team has decided to extend it to a year-long contract, for what it's worth, a year-long contract this year. The former Chicago Bulls player competed in 7 consecutive playoffs and proved to be a solid center for his team. For Joakim Noah, is this a chance to prove himself, and particularly, are they doing this because they're going to play the Lakers, who have a lot of size?
Let me answer your second question first. Absolutely. The Lakers have size, and so does Milwaukee with Giannis and Brooke Lopez. So if they were lucky enough to make it to the finals, then you're dealing with twin towers in both cases. JaVale McGee and Anthony Davis with the Lakers, Brooke Lopez and Giannis with the Bucks. And I'll say this about Noah. He is probably at the end of his career, but when he played in Chicago, Mace, this guy was just a baller. You'd look at his line at the end of games, and he was pretty good in Memphis, too.
Yeah.
You'd look at his lines at the end of games. He'd have like 19 points, 18 rebounds, and 8 assists. I mean, he's just, if you needed him to play 30 minutes, that's a problem. If you only need him to play 10 minutes, and that would be his role on the Clippers, I think he can actually help. I don't blame them for signing Noah. He's a veteran guy who, if you're only asking him to go 10 minutes, you've seen what Dwight Howard, who only plays 19 minutes a game, has done for the Lakers. Dwight's been an absolute game changer. I don't think Joakim is as good as Dwight at this stage of his career, but he could be in that kind of role for the Clippers. I think it's a good move by them.
And the Clippers absolutely need size. I mean, facing a team with size is their kryptonite. They've got phenomenal wing players. They've got Montrezl Harrell and our kid. Who's our kid?
Ivica Zubats.
Ivica Zubats.
Yeah.
But they really don't have any other big bodies to throw at guys like Giannis and throw at guys like Anthony Davis. So they need another big body, and Joakim Noah fills that role.
Okay,
our
Mace.
Kid.
Yeah. The Raptors arrived in Southwest Florida on Monday, yesterday, set to begin their preparations for next month's restart in the NBA season. People forget, they're the reigning NBA champs. They'll start training later this week at Florida Gulf Coast University in Fort Myers, making that school their home base until they head north to the ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex near Orlando around July 7th. Toronto's arrival comes as Florida is dealing with a big spike in coronavirus test results over the past week. The Disney complex is about 2.5 hours from Fort Myers, but it's set to play host to both the NBA and Major League Soccer next month. Now, right now, the Raptors are not allowed to start group workouts until they get to Disney World. Here's my question. Would it be smarter to let Toronto go to Disney now? Start group workouts, see if any of those players test positive. Wouldn't that give the NBA a good test case, or would that be too risky?
Well, I think it would give them an unfair advantage to get there and to be able to work out and to be able to be in that facility before anybody else. I think gives them an advantage. In the same way, the Lakers have taken an advantage because they, according to people like Bill Simmons and J.J. Redick, have found a full-size Staples Center-style basketball court to work out on and to play in. This is rumor right now, but
alleged.
Alleged practice facility in Bel Air. So it does make sense. But I think it's giving the Raptors an unfair advantage to get in there, to get settled, and to be able to play 5-on-5 before everybody else.
It's you.
Oh. Brett Favre said Sunday that former NFL quarterback turned activist Colin Kaepernick should be given hero status, like former NFL star Pat Tillman, who was killed in action in Afghanistan after leaving football to join the Army following 9/11. Like Tillman, says Favre, Kaepernick gave up his career, fame, and fortune for a just cause. Is it fair to compare Kaepernick to Pat Tillman?
Probably not. Tillman gave up his life for his country. Kaepernick gave up his career, maybe, but Colin could go back on a team this year. Who'd we have on yesterday? Albert Breer saying he thought it could happen.
Yeah.
So the Kaepernick story is, for lack of a better word, unfinished at this point. Tillman, he gave up his life. I was blown away when Pat Tillman did that. He had 3 years left on his contract. He was probably the best player on that Arizona defense. And he basically gave it all up to join the Army Rangers. The only thing I've ever heard comparable to that is when Maya Moore, who is one of the best players in the WNBA, like a top five player, heard about a guy who had been jailed. She felt unfairly and basically quit the sport to get this guy out of jail. It was just, but Tillman's sacrifice was military. I mean, he put himself in harm's way. So I don't mean to diminish what Kaepernick did, but I think Tillman was the, as they say when you and I read a lot of military books, he gave the ultimate sacrifice.
Yeah.
And so I would put Tillman in a class by himself.
I think they're separate symbols. You know, Tillman represents a great tradition in this country. After Pearl Harbor, the day after Pearl Harbor, recruiting offices for the military were just packed with people who are ready to volunteer. Tillman is in that tradition. I don't know anybody. I know there are people that did, but recruiting offices weren't packed the day after 9/11. But Tillman was there and chose to serve his country as opposed to serving the NFL. Kaepernick is just a different kind of symbol. I would put the two in different categories. Both definitely gave up their careers, their fame, and their fortune for a just cause, but very different causes.
Punch. All right, Mace, despite having two players diagnosed with the coronavirus and an assistant coach test positive last week. Tampa Bay Buccaneer players are continuing to hold group workouts at a local high school. The Tampa Bay Times reported that Tom Brady and several teammates were at Berkeley Prep this morning, despite the NFL Players Association advising against such workouts. Brady was seen practicing today with Rob Gronkowski, Chris Godwin, Scotty Miller, Jamel Dean, Sean Murphy Bunting, Mike Edwards, Blaine Gabbert, Ryan Griffin, and Ryan Jensen. Do Brady and the Buccaneers deserve to be criticized for this? Or do you admire the fact that they're getting an early jump on what could be a huge season?
Well, I mean, I got to believe that these guys draw so much attention. You're talking about Tom Brady. There are other teams that have guys working out. There are other teams that are doing exactly the same thing. We just know about Tampa. There's a risk that goes along with it. I mean, you can show up at training camp positive for the coronavirus and immediately be set down in for 14 days. And those are important players for Tampa to lose, even in the short term. So there's a risk that goes along with it. But I hardly believe that they're the only ones doing it.
I agree with you. And also, I would need to see video of the workouts to see if they deserve criticism. If Brady is just throwing a football and they're all wearing gloves, and they're just running routes.
By the way, I don't understand the gloves thing.
Okay,
what is the gloves thing? If you wear a pair of gloves and you touch something, then you touch something else, you have the potential to pass the virus, don't you?
Well, except,
unless you change gloves after every time you catch the football.
Well, it depends. Didn't they come out and say that it is not transfer on surfaces as quickly as they initially thought?
Yes, they did come out and say that. But the gloves thing never made sense to me. As soon as you touch something with a glove, I mean, unless you're going to take it off and put on a different glove, you're just passing along by glove.
Well, when I used to go pick up food right in the beginning of the coronavirus, I would be wearing a mask and gloves everywhere. So I'd be touching my steering wheel and my car door and everything with the gloves. I was really careful not to touch my face. I would go to the store. I'd pick up the food. I'd come home. I'd take the food out of the containers. I put it on a plate. Then I'd take the gloves off and wash my hands. So
right.
I didn't really transfer it to anybody, did I?
No, you did not.
So, I mean, that's what I'm saying. If they're all wearing gloves and they're being careful, it would be different than if they're engaging in, like, if the linemen are going at each other and blocking
sure.
for Brady and they're tackling. I don't know what specifically they're doing.
But they're not the only ones.
And Mace, not only are they not the only ones, I'm not so sure we're playing football anyway.
Yeah.
So maybe they're just trying to, you know, err on the side of overprepared, because I don't know if it'll make a difference or not.
All right. This is Pride Month, celebrating the contributions of LGBTQ people across the country. We've seen women like Megan Rapinoe and Cheryl Swoops and Sue Bird and Elena Deladona and Brittany Griner. Griner and other WNBA stars come out as gay. But we have yet to see a male athlete in one of the four major North American sports come out as gay. John, we bring this up, I think, in June every year because of Pride Month. Are we getting any closer to a male athlete in one of the four major North American sports coming out?
I'd like to think so. As you know, I know Jason Collins a little bit.
Yes.
I thought when he came out, although he did it in the final year of his career, I thought it was very well received. And I think Jason's intention in doing it was to maybe soften the landing for a future player to do it. But since then, there have been soccer players who have done it. You mentioned Megan Rapinoe, who's pretty famous on the U.S. national team. But could an NFL, NBA, MLB player do it? You would know better than me. How do you think it would go over?
I think, because I went through this, in a limited way as a sports talk radio guy, I personally think it would go over really, really well. But I also don't think we're any closer to it happening.
Why?
The social impact is just so unpredictable.
Well, I thought it worked against Michael Sam.
Yeah, I do too.
He became, and this is something you worried about when you came out. You didn't want to become you didn't want to be known as Steve Mason, the gay sportscaster. You wanted to be known as Steve Mason, a sportscaster who just happened to be gay. I think Michael Sam fell victim to the first thing that you were worried about. It became, he was just the gay guy trying to play in the NFL.
He became a poster boy, yeah.
Right. So that I think lends itself to your point.
I think whoever does it, and I think the biggest reaction wouldn't be necessarily from teammates or media. The biggest reaction would be from fans. And that player is going to have to deal with a lot of homophobic taunts and inappropriate stuff if they do come out and they face fans.
I would hope that's not true, but again, you're closer to this stuff than I am, so I'll take your word for it. I know one thing: if anybody ever does come out in one of those four major sports, they got a soft landing spot here.
Yes, they do.
We'll get that guy on right away.
They'll do well on this show. All right, there's your scoop for today. Coming back next, baseball is coming back, and it's official now. Plus, John, I've got a personal and impossible question for you to answer.
Okay, good.
Or to do your best to answer. That's coming up next for you. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. No asterisk. Boy, you really shaded that against me, Funch.
No, you're winning the poll.
Yeah, right now, the question was originally, what's more difficult, winning a 162-game season or winning a 60-game season? And 57% say it's winning a 60-game season. And the reason is, I cannot guarantee you that the Dodgers are going to make the playoffs in a 60-game season. Because it's not uncommon for a team to lose 7 of 10. To lose 12 of 15. And if you find yourself in a hole, if you don't start off well, you're going to be playing catch-up all year long, and you're potentially going to see a hot young Padres team or a decent Arizona team with Paul Goldschmidt. You're going to see one of those teams maybe take off ahead of you, and you're playing catch-up all year long.
Isn't Goldschmidt in St. Louis now?
I'm sorry, in St. Louis. You're right, in St. Louis. But I strongly believe it's going to be harder. By the way, players are expected to report next Wednesday.
Week tomorrow.
All right, so John, here's the burning issue. Are you ready? And Funch, you can weigh in on this, and Lindsay, you can too. So, when I say it's a very good friend of mine, it's not me. Okay. So sometimes you'll say it's a very good friend of mine, and it really happens to be you. It's not. Okay. So a very good friend of mine, his best friend, he just found out, is dealing hard drugs.
Okay.
Hard drugs.
Got it.
H, as they would say on The Sopranos.
Heroin. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
What should he do?
All right. So it's...
Friend of yours, you find out, is dealing heroin. What do you do?
And it's a good friend?
Good friend.
I go to him in person. I wouldn't do it in a text or an
email
or anything. I go
Zoom
to him in person.
Call.
I'd say, hey, man, let's go for a walk. I got to talk to you about something important. And I would say, look, I just found out you're doing this. I'm not going to turn you in. I'm not going to do it, but I can't be friends with you anymore. I'm not that guy. I'm not going to call the cops or turn you in or anything else, but I'm married. I have a kid. I can't have you be around them. I can't have you be around me. I have a career to think about. I can't be friends with you. So you let me know how you want to play it. If you're going to keep doing that, let's just, agree that we had a great run and we're done.
Interesting.
What would you do?
God, it's so hard to say you turn him in, but he's poisoning a lot of people, right?
Right. All right, I'll ask you a harder one.
Okay.
Okay, he's one of your best friends.
Yep.
He's dealing.
Yep.
Another friend comes to you, not as good of a friend, but somebody you know comes to you and goes, look, we can take him down in a sting operation, but we need you to be a part of it. He'll never know that it was you, but we can set it up so we catch him and get him off the street. Do you do it?
You know, just because I know that is poison. And who knows, poisoning kids. I think I would do it. I think I would take him down.
It's a very tough call. I was golfing once, and one of my friends said to me, some guy walked by, and my friend said hi to this guy. I had never met him before. He goes, you know, like, hey, Greg, how you doing, man? Good to see you. And as he walked by, my friend whispers to me, biggest drug dealer in Beverly Hills.
Really?
And I went, still? He goes, I think so.
Wow.
And I went, wow. And he has never been caught. He goes, don't think so.
Funch, what would you do?
I think I would have like a silent distance away from him. I don't think I could pull him aside. I don't think I have the heart to pull him aside, like John says. I think
you
I
wouldn't
would just,
confront him.
I don't think I can confront him. I think
and
I'd,
you wouldn't take you, him
you,
down.
Funch, you in essence would ghost him.
Yeah, probably. I think I would just not contact him as much as, you know, as I used to, or just not return his calls or his texts or anything, and just, you know, just do me. Basically.
So you quietly would just not be friends with him.
Yeah,
anymore.
Probably,
but not take him down.
I'm not a snitch, guys. Sorry.
Yeah, that was my first thought. Yeah. Lindsay, what would you do?
Well, I guess it depends on how you found out. Assuming that they didn't tell you themselves.
Mace, do you know how he found out?
Yeah.
He was told. He was told by someone who was buying.
Okay.
So in that case, I would probably attempt to talk to him about it, see what the deal is. And depending on how that goes, assuming, you know, he admits to it, and that's just his life plan at this point, I would seriously consider snitching on him, because in most cases when I have a really, really, really strong opinion about especially that drug in particular.
Yep.
As somebody who grew up in the Midwest, like the whole opioid epidemic hit really close to home, and a lot of people have died from it and people very close to me. I think I would probably go to the cops, because in that situation, it's very rare that they're going to stop until they get caught.
Right. So I will tell this guy that I think the most reasonable approach is to not be friends anymore.
Right. I don't think you can be.
You it's can't afford to have that in your
life. It's too risky.
Yeah, you definitely can't be friends with the person.
What if
I
you're
don't
out
think
on
that's a question.
Especially if you're good friends with him. What if you're traveling with him and you're in a car and you guys get pulled over and he gets busted on possession?
Right, exactly. Yeah, you can't risk it. You can't risk it. All right. Hey, let
now,
me...
Now, here's a harder one, because this one's more moral.
Yeah.
Let's say you find out that somebody you work with... Let's say you find out me. You find this about me. That I am having an affair on Lisa.
Yes.
And in this age, I would be putting her health at risk. But you know, and you know it's true. Do you confront me? Do you find a way to get word to her? Do you do nothing?
You know, I think I do. It depends on who you're better friends with.
Well, you're in
right?
this case,
That's
you're better friends with
to.
Me. Like,
I'm better friends with you, so I don't call Lisa.
Right. But you could find a way to get word to her. Or I did this once to a pretty good friend of mine, a coworker who I worked really close with. I found out he was having an affair, and I knew his wife. I was at his wedding. And I went to him, and I said, look, man, I know this is none of my
business.
You
were at his wedding, and he was having an affair?
Correct.
Oh.
And when I found out about it.
Oh, that's cold.
I like his wife a lot. And when I found out about it, I went to him individually, and I go, let me start by saying, I know this is none of my business.
Right.
Okay. And I think that was my indicator that he could kind of telling him where I was about to go.
Yeah.
And I go, but I've heard from two different people that you're having an affair with so-and-so. And if I'm hearing it, it won't be long before your wife hears it, because everyone knows you and I are friends. The only way they would tell me is if it was in the rumor mill and you're about to get caught. And he was very like he goes, I appreciate you coming to me. You're coming from a place of friendship. I got to get my blank together, and I will. And that's the last time we ever brought it up.
And did he end the affair?
He did. But he's now divorced. Not surprisingly.
Yeah. If you're having an affair on your wedding day.
Not on his wedding day.
Well, he had an ongoing affair while he was getting married.
No, he was already married. I was at his wedding, and this was like a year later. Like a year into him being married, somebody came to me, two different people came to me and goes, hey, you know he's sleeping with so-and-so. And I said, no, I didn't. And when I heard it the second time, I went to him and told him.
Yeah. Yeah, those are sticky. Those are sticky situations. But if you're my friend, if you're more my friend, and you're definitely more my friend than I am Lisa's friend, so I would not snitch on you.
Yeah, but I think I would tell you. Like, if somebody said, hey, you know, Mace is sleeping around on Juan, I wouldn't tell Juan, even though I like him a lot.
But you'd tell other people?
No, I would tell you.
Oh,
I would
okay.
say, hey, I would do exactly what I did with that other guy. I would say, hey, just so you know, if I'm hearing it, other people are hearing it.
Right.
So it's out there. Get a handle on whatever it is you're doing. But I would tell you that it's out there.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Coming up next for you, let's pivot back to out of the heavy stuff.
Yes,
the hard
out of the moral dilemmas.
The moral dilemmas. And ask you about this dilemma. And I asked it earlier, and I strongly believe in this, and the poll seems to be backing it up. The question is it more difficult to win a 162-game season or to win a 60-game season? And I'm thinking about this from a Dodger perspective.
Okay.
In a 60-game season, there is no guarantee, I'm telling you, no guarantee that the Dodgers will make the playoffs. That scares me. Every single game is going to be filled with pressure, and you're going to hang on every single pitch. I think it'll be almost like playoff baseball every game because you're not going to be separated by 20 games when you go down the stretch like they were last year. I think it's going to be really tough. And, John, you think – are you an asterisk guy?
No, I don't think you can put an asterisk on it, but I absolutely don't think it's going to be the same as winning 162. I'm with Lindsay on this, and I can't believe you're arguing that it's more difficult to win a 60-game.
Oh.
It's more random, but it's not more difficult. We can get into
but
it.
If you're
and let's open the phones and let people react, too. 877-710-ESPN.
877-710-ESPN. Mason in Ireland, 710-ESPN. All right, 710-ESPN, Mason in Ireland, what is going on? Talking about baseball, which is coming back officially, players will report on Wednesday. The season expected to start on July the 24th. We don't have a schedule yet. There will be a universal DH. There will also, in extra innings, be a runner put at second base. By the way, interestingly, the pitcher will not be charged with an earned run if that runner scores from second base. So that's
interesting,
I think.
Yeah, he shouldn't be.
Because it's not his runner.
Right.
And then on top of that, we just found out that the trade deadline is going to be August the 31st. So August the 31st will be the Major League Baseball trade deadline in this 60-game season.
Now, you have argued throughout the show today that it would be harder, more difficult. Win a 60-game season than to win a 162-game season. And I want to make sure you're arguing this the way you think you are. Are you?
Do you think I'm deeply confused?
You are. It's not harder. It's more random. I mean, 162 games is a haul. It's a grueling season. I mean, that's Mace. This is why, if you watch that Maguire-Sosa documentary, that's why those guys claim they took steroids. They couldn't make it through the gauntlet of 162 games. 162 games is harder. Now, if you're arguing that it's more random, that teams that aren't as good are going to have a better chance to win, I'll agree with you. But harder, more difficult? No way. What's your argument?
My argument is, okay, let me ask you. Do the Dodgers have a better chance of making the playoffs in a 60-game season or in a 162-game season?
162.
Okay. that makes it inherently more difficult for them to make the playoffs. You're acknowledging that 162 games, they make the playoffs. I would guarantee they make the playoffs over 162.
Right,
over 60, I don't know.
Is based strictly on sample size. You're lowering the sample size. It would be as if...
That's what makes it tougher. Like, smaller sample size makes it tougher.
I'm a better golfer than you, okay?
Yes, that's true.
If you and I played 18 holes, I would destroy you.
Yes.
If you and I played one hole, you might win. And if we played one shot, your chances go up even more. That's all we're arguing about here.
You're making my point for me. The randomness is what makes it more difficult. What makes it harder.
Wait. What about, for example, with a bad team, we're going to take like Miami okay. Marlins. Is it going to be
Project Wolverine
more difficult or for them to win in 162 game season or 60 game season? The Miami Marlins, a bad team.
She's right. She just flipped it on you, and she's right.
Yeah, I'm looking at this through the Dodger prism. In other words, I think that if you look at the best teams in baseball this year, Dodgers, Yankees, let's see, who else
Astros,
is near the top?
Astros. Being honest.
One of those teams is probably – I think it's highly likely that one of those favorites is going to miss the playoffs. So you're right. From a bad team perspective, it's easier to get on a hot streak. From a good team perspective, it's harder to win the division.
Let's see what Josh from Thousand Oaks thinks on line three. Hey, Josh, you're on 710 ESPN.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Great show today.
Thanks, man.
I do not know what you're so scared about. I mean, we have the vets. We have some of the best regular season pitchers there are. David Price is a great regular season pitcher. With our lineup, I mean, we got vets. We got Turner, Betts, Bellinger coming back. And once we get to the playoffs, I mean, what has been the thing that has killed us in the playoffs for so long? Clayton Kershaw. He no longer has to pitch as much. He's going to be on fire going into the playoffs. We're going to be just fine.
What do you say about that, Mr. Half-empty, glass half-empty?
I cannot guarantee the Dodgers will make the playoffs in a 60-game season. I can't. Things can go sideways easy over 60 games. Look at the Nationals last year. What were they, 19-31? They were 19-31 through 50, and they ended up turning it around because the season was 162 games. A really good team can go on a losing streak. There was that crazy losing streak the Dodgers had near the end of the season. What was that, 2 years ago?
When they lost like 15 of 16 down the stretch.
15 of 16. You can get into a bad
series that year. Hey, let's get Daniel from Valencia in here. Hey, Daniel, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
How we doing? Listen, John, I can't believe you can't see how right Mace is in this situation.
Why? What are you talking about? Why is it harder, Daniel?
I'm going to tell you right now. I'll tell you exactly why it's harder. You take a 60-game schedule with Major League Baseball players, Major League managers, you're going to see things in games 25 through 35, games 30 through 45. You're going to see pitching changes, you're going to see playoff baseball, you know, 40 games in, and you're going to start seeing teams jockeying for position. And I tell you, I'm not too sure with Dave Roberts' analytics in a 60 game season. Let me tell you something, 162 games, I'm comfortable with Roberts, I'm comfortable with his decisions. In a 60 game season, it's a whole nother story. You go on an 8-10 game losing streak, you could be out of it.
Yep.
A Betts or a Turner goes down for 2 weeks on the DL or something like that. 2 weeks, you're talking 25% of a season, and you're losing a star or a stud in that time frame, and another team sneaks up on you. And I look at teams like the Astros and guys and managing the way he manages, the way he throws one pitcher after another, and he just keeps coming with them and making those changes. You might see that kind of baseball for 60 straight games out of a lot of teams, and you may see some of these teams that aren't very good sneak in there, and some of these teams that are surefire winner of 162-game season be out of the playoffs. They might be outside the window looking in with 10 games to go.
All right, thanks for the call, man.
He made my point perfectly.
But he made your point, but he also completely contradicted it because he said you may see some teams that aren't very good sneak into the playoffs. So once again, you're looking at it strictly from the Dodgers perspective.
I'm looking at it strictly from a Dodger perspective. Absolutely. I'm looking at it from a Dodger perspective. We're the ones that are most likely to get screwed.
So it's more difficult for the Dodgers, not in general, just for the Dodgers.
For the good teams. It's more difficult for the good teams, and it's easier for the bad teams.
I totally agree, because like he just said, if a bad team can sneak in because it's only 60 games, then that makes it easier for them, because they don't deserve to be there. How do you know the Baltimore Orioles aren't going to make the playoffs? The Baltimore Orioles could win it all. They've been notoriously one of the worst teams in baseball for the past 5 years.
Yeah, but I'm looking at this from a Dodger perspective.
Sure, but you didn't clarify that. No point did you say that until I brought that up to you.
Lindsay, are you trying right now to use my own words against me? Is that really what you're trying to do?
No, Lindsay, that's exactly what you're doing, and it's brilliant.
Do you think I could be responsible for what I said last hour?
Or 10 minutes ago?
I think we can all agree
that in a web of his own lies.
Exactly. And I think we can all agree that the good teams are getting hosed because they don't get the opportunity to stand out and grind through the 162 game season and show that they're the best through all the injuries and everything else that you have to deal with over the course of 162 games, where other teams would have dropped like flies. But in 60 games, obviously the field is wider. There's more, you know, that there's more randomness to it. And so a bad team can get in just as easily as a good team.
This just in from O'Shea Jackson Jr. John, you completely lost the Dodger argument. Mason, you definitely said for the Dodgers before you started talking. Thank you very much, O'Shea Jackson Jr.
Okay, but my retort to that is there's a decent chance that O'Shea is stoned when he wrote that tweet.
Highly unlikely.
Friend
Shea, he is involved in the agriculture. There's no question about it. But that doesn't make you dumb.
No.
Does that make me dumb?
Sometimes some of the greatest movies of all time have been written by people while they're stoned.
Yes. All right. Coming up next for you, is this it?
It's Radio Tinder time.
Radio Tinder is coming up next for you. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, 710 ESPN, Mason in Ireland. What is going on? It is Tuesday. And we're trying a new thing. It's called Radio Tinder. And John, let's play the opening for it. Smooth. All right. So we will bring up a topic, and John and I can either swipe left and skip it altogether, or swipe right and talk about it. So I will start first here, John. There are 6 million planets just like Earth. Swipe left or swipe right?
Swipe left. I don't care how many planets there are. What else you got?
Is Russell Crowe enough to get people back into movie theaters?
Swipe right. I want to talk about this. What do you got there?
Russell Crowe's got a brand new movie that will open in theaters on July the 10th. It'll be the first major film release since the pandemic hit. It's called Unhinged, and it is described as a road rage thriller about a guy with a very bad temper, which actually sounds a little bit like Russell Crowe. Is this enough to get people to come back into theaters, or will people wait for Christopher Nolan's Tenet on July 31st?
Well, let me start by saying that I mentioned to you that a couple of months ago I watched Cinderella Man.
Yes.
Which is when Ron Howard directed it. It's about Jim Braddock, who was a boxing champion in the 1920s and 30s. Russell Crowe is so good in it, and the movie is so good, that I think it's one of the most underrated sports movies of all time. Then, Mace, like a week and a half ago, you know me, Broadway John, I watched the movie Les Miserables.
No, stop it. You did not watch
Russell Crowe is so unwatchably bad in Les Miserables and is such a bad singer that I said, this is the end for Russell Crowe. His apex has now come and gone. I no longer think he can open a movie. So I think people are going to wait for Christopher Nolan, simply based on me watching Les Miserables. What do you think?
Completely agree with you. I don't think Russell Crowe sells tickets anymore. I don't think this movie is going to work. I think it's too soon. I think people are more likely ready to go back into a movie theater at a reduced capacity on July 31st than they are on July the 10th. So I am calling this a flop. To you.
All right, Mace. Our good friend, Mike Trudell, is in a Twitter battle with Clippers fans and Lou Williams. Swipe left or swipe right?
Swipe right. I want to hear about this.
Okay, so Trudell made what, you know, keep in mind that Mike, like me, works for the Lakers.
Yes.
He is a very big fan of Alex Caruso.
Sure.
Mike and I also know Lou Williams, who played for the Lakers and is a great guy. Lou's a great guy. So Mike made the observation on one of his many platforms that personally, in his personal opinion, he would rather have Alex Caruso than Lou Williams. Reason being, according to Mike, Caruso is a more complete player. He does everything. He rebounds, he scores, he plays defense, he hustles. Lou does one thing extraordinarily well. He scores. So Clipper fans got all over Trudell, and somehow Lou heard about it.
Okay.
And simply tweeted this at 2:03 in the morning. At Mike Trudell, thanks, I needed that. With a happy face with sunglasses on. So a couple of questions here. First of all, is Trudell right? Would you rather have Alex Caruso or Lou Williams?
Look, I love Alex Caruso, but I would rather have Lou Williams. Six man of the year, Lou Williams guy. Give me six man of the year guy.
You know Trudell is my guy.
Yes.
I love Trudell. He's wrong about this. Lou is, he's unguardable. You can't guard that dude when he gets going. He is a wonderful player, and I love Alex, too.
Oh, so Alex is great.
Okay, second question. Do you, Lou's just playing here, right? This doesn't give him motivation in any way, does it?
No, it can't possibly give him motivation. I mean, I don't know. It would give Michael Jordan motivation. I don't think Lou has that temperament.
Lou's too good of a guy, right?
Where he holds every single grudge against every single person. He's not that guy. So
are you surprised
I would
say, Lou? Are you surprised Lou jumped into it?
I am, although I like that he did. I think it's fun that he did. Yeah,
I do too. I think it's a fun little exchange. And I know for a fact Trudell thinks the world of him. So I think they're just two guys that know each other kind of going back and forth. But the Clipper fans are all up in arms. The Clipper fans are, what? You can't say Alex Caruso is better than Lou. Keep in mind, folks, we'll be happy if we even see the games, if we even get to play. So it's just a fun who would you rather, and I think you can make the argument either way. All yours.
Tua Tagovailoa, celebrity crush.
Okay. Swipe left or swipe right? Is that what
you're saying? Swipe left or swipe right.
Swipe right? Who is it?
Okay. Dolphins rookie Tua Tagovailoa. Oh, I was doing so good there, too.
Yeah, I was just going to credit you for all your great pronunciations.
Tua threw up a Hail Mary pass to a celebrity crush last week. In a Q&A video posted on the Dolphins Twitter account, Tua revealed that Shania Twain is still the one to him. The quarterback says he not only is a big fan of her music, he has a legit crush on her. So what do you think of Tua's crush? And with all the world's superstar actresses and Instagram stars, doesn't it seem a little outdated? And then aside from Kate Beckinsale, who is your biggest celebrity crush?
Okay, so to answer your first question first, yeah, what is Tua? Tua's like 21, right?
Yeah.
How old, Lindsay, look it up. How old is Shania Twain? She's got to be close to 50, right?
She's got to be 50, right?
Yeah, she's 54.
It's just
54.
Shania looks great.
She does.
I've always thought Shania Twain is fantastic. But I don't get that. I don't get Tua.
Yeah, I don't get that.
Going for Shania Twain. And Kate Beckinsale is the only one on my list.
Come on. Who is number two? There has to be a number two.
No, I have a laminated card, and it only has one name on it. And it's
one
Kate
name
Beckinsale.
On it.
Now, if I had to come up with one.
Yeah.
Kate Beckinsale has kind of spun off the planet. Now all she does is date 21-year-olds.
Yes.
So I'm way too old for her now, even though her and I are around the same age.
By the way, you and not stepdad Leo, Kate Beckinsale, is his favorite, too.
Yeah. You know who I think is really attractive and who would be age-appropriate for me?
Yep.
J-Lo.
Oh, J-Lo.
Don't you think J-Lo is just, like, super J-Lo's attractive?
She is unbelievable. I think she's 50. She looks spectacular.
Right.
just unbelievable.
Who's yours?
Mine is Keanu Reeves.
I don't blame you. I'm not even on your team, and I can understand that since I was a kid.
All right. Is that it? Yeah, that's it. That's the end of Radio Tinder.
All right. Well, yeah, we'll try it again tomorrow.
All right. Coming up for you at 5:15, Bill Plachke is going to join us.
Really?
Up next,
you're letting him on the show?
Yeah, letting him up. Hey, by the way, he is just as negative as you would expect him to be.
Well, he may
with his latest column.
Wait, but here's the thing. He may turn out to be right. You and I have been saying the whole time, what do you mean no sports? You can't even suggest no sports. There may be no sports. He may be right. We'll get into it with Bill.
All right, that's coming up for you, Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway to the confidence of knowing that GEICO always has your back with 24/7 access to claim service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.